Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon, high school tennis fans. This is Coach Denise bringing you the Florida High School Tennis Coaches Association perspective on high school tennis. Looking forward to talking with you today. We thank those of you that are on the Blog Talk Radio, the UR10 Network, and those of you who would like to talk with our guest today, who is Roy Jessfield. And he has an outstanding book. You can call in at 714-583-6853, and I'm sure Roy would be glad to answer any questions that you may have of him. We have plenty of questions for him. I have read his book. I actually have had the privilege of having Roy as one of our presenters at our last October training for the Florida Athletic Coaches Association, and he was one of the people that did a great job, and he brought his first edition book. There's a second edition out now, which is, well, I won't say even better, but I like the size and everything better than the first one. And but they're both just great reading. So we'll be happy to start talking with him in a few minutes. Hopefully he'll be calling in. We also have some good shows coming up. Next Thursday we will have Tarek Merchant from Canada. He's the founder of I'm Recruitable, which is college sport recruiting. He'll be talking to you about college opportunities and scholarship assessments. He's been with us for a couple years. He does a great job. He's also one of our videos that we have on our website, which of course is www.fhstca.org, is the most viewed video of all the training videos we have on. So it's obvious that there's a lot of people that are trying to keep up with the NCAA rules and regulations. There is a lot of opportunities out there for tennis, high school tennis players to be playing college tennis. We know that over our social network, the requests we get on Facebook and on our Twitter to sit there and share coaches' information who are looking for tennis players for their programs, which we're happy to do. And again, our social media, everything is the same, fhstca.org. The following Thursday, we'll be talking with Coach Charles White up in Alabama. He's at Marion Military Institute. It's a two-year college, the Military College of Alabama, actually, and I've had the privilege of sending a couple of my former girls from my high school to his program, and they had a very rewarding time there. Went on from there. One of them actually went on and got a full ride at the University of Alabama later on. So we have some exciting guests that will be coming on in the future, and I'm sure you're going to find it interesting, and you'll see what our perspective is on high school tennis. One of the great contributors of high school tennis, especially with the Florida High School Tennis Coaches Association, is Wilson. And Wilson Sports has been with us for a few years. They are a great supporter of our All-Star Tournament, which I will remind you that comes up following the FHSAA State Championships. That'll be the last weekend in April. It'll be the tournament is in Winter Park, Florida. And matter of fact, I think that's one of the places that you can get Roy Jesper's book at that facility. I think they have the book, A High School Tennis Coach Handbook, which, again, if you haven't read it, I suggest you read it. But Wilson will be, again, we'll be using the Wilson tennis ball at the All-Star Tournament. We will have Wilson goodie bags from all the players there. And at our end of the year, excuse me, training and workshop at FACA workshop in Daytona Beach the first weekend in December, Wilson will be providing Coach of the Year awards to our Florida coaches. So, like I said, Wilson is one of the great tennis sponsors we have. All the people aren't just associated with tennis, but there's high school tennis is more than tennis players, parents, and coaches. In order to do this, we have to there's a lot of people that bring this program to you and other programs. Excuse me a second. Sorry about this. Hopefully in a few minutes I won't have to be talking as much. Of course, at that same All-Star event, tennis Team Connection will be providing shirts for all the players and coaches from around the state. The All-Star Tournament is actually a team event. We bring teams in from the 16 regions of Florida. We have three boys and three girls represent each one of the regions, and they travel to Winter Park, and it's a two-day event, the tournament. But we hope that you go to the website and nominate your high school senior, because all the high school seniors in tennis are All-Stars. All of them naturally won't be chosen to make the trip to Winter Park, Florida, but our organization, like any not-for-profit organization, needs the funds to keep providing the services we do, not only to high school coaches, but to the players and to the parents. And we ask you to nominate your high school senior. It's a $35 cost. It can be done right on the website. And we will send certificates out to all the All-Stars throughout the state. What will happen is that the two regional coaches in each of the 16 regions will bring three boys and three girls to Winter Park tennis facility, and at that time we'll play the WTT format, and decide who will be the team champion, which region will be the team champion. Last year, the championship winner came out of Miami, Florida. The previous 2 years, it came from the Naples area. So it's always an exciting tournament. We try to send our high school seniors off to college with a rewarding competition, but also a fun event. And we want them to know that we appreciate what they have done, and we want them to be recognized. And we ask you to please recognize your high school senior, and please get the word out for the High School All-Star Tournament. Dean Street Insurance is another one of our companies that have been very supportive of us and takes care of us, our needs, and I'm sure they could take care of your needs too. And where would we be without Florida Tennis Magazine? One of the early people that realized that our high school college, future college players, our volunteers, our future high school tennis pros and coaches, they're all in high school now, and we've had a proud association with that organization for the last 4 years, and I'm privileged to write two articles every issue in Florida Tennis Magazine, and it's one of the benefits of being a FHSTCA member. Is if you are an FHSTCA member, we will electronically send the magazine to you. We know that many people like to read the magazine. I admit to being one of those people that like to have the magazine in my hands. We can do that too. But, you know, sometimes the magazine disappears from your tennis club, and it's nice to know that if the magazine is not at your tennis club, that you can find Florida Tennis Magazine and our articles at our website. I see now that we are joined by Roy Gesbold, and and I'd like to get Roy on the program, so let me see if I can get him hooked up here. Roy, are you there? Okay.
You hear me okay?
Roy, I can now. I'm sorry. That was me messing up. Me and computers don't get along that good, but thank you for being here with us today. How's everything out in California?
Well, it's great. It's great. When I was in grade school, we had a sign near the door that said, to err is human, but to really foul things up takes a computer. If you've got computer challenges, don't worry. We get them out here as well. So you were mentioning privilege earlier. It's a real privilege to be on the show. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you, Roy. I was telling the people earlier that I've been privileged to have you come out and join us and at the R train in last October, and I don't have to tell you because you were there how well received you were, and your book was received. And I have to admit, I enjoyed the book immensely, but I love the idea your second edition, the size and everything. I think it's fantastic.
Well, thanks. I realize that, you know, if we're going to encompass the whole sport of tennis, we should probably include the children and the parents in the conversation along with the coaches and the administration. And so I I just realized that in order to do that, I needed to broaden the scope just a little bit from exclusively high school coaches to include parents and players as well. And actually, it's it's done much, much better now that I've broadened the scope and included more people into the conversation.
Well, that's great. You've done a great job. Roy, as you know, I'm a big believer in testing because you were part of our first certification program. And I like to, actually go through certification myself and see if my interpretation of the book is the same as yours. So I want to give myself a self-test. And I'd like to ask you a few questions and make sure that I've taken full advantage of the great book. Can you, maybe before we get into the book, can you tell me something about your experience in the tennis profession?
Yeah, well, you know, Coach, my profession started off very early in Los Angeles. We used to have a tournament at the Great Western Forum, and my family was a big believer in experiential education as well as bookroom education. So when I was 10 and 11 and 12, I think it was three straight years, I didn't miss a day of school due to health reasons, but my parents allowed me to leave school very early, be at the forum by noon, and be a ball boy for, it was, you know, we had McEnroe and I remember Andrea Jaeger and, you know, all these great players, and I would be out of school early and start being a ball boy for these people. And actually, I got my first standing ovation as a tennis player. We had these fish nets. And McEnroe had hit a big smash, and I jumped up and netted the thing, and nobody ever thought it was over my head. And so I got my first taste of, you know, what it feels like to be around big-time tennis at that point. And then I ended up playing through high school, college, professionally afterwards. I worked at resorts all over the world and coached collegiately. I became a referee, a tournament director, and have just, you know, been around tennis my whole life. I started playing at age four, so it feels, you know, like a very comfortable area for me to discuss. So I'm grateful to have been exposed to it early and to see some high level of tennis at a young age.
I'd like to ask you another question, Roy, because one of the questions I get asked a lot is, should I, you know, have my son or daughter just play one sport? Did you play more than one sport, or were you a tennis-only person?
Well, yeah, my folks were also, you know, what their strategy was they exposed me to as many kind of different areas that I was interested in as possible. So my mom was a swim teacher. I did a lot of swimming. I was in Los Angeles. We had, you know, Showtime. This was the Lakers. So I was playing a lot of basketball volleyball. I mean, I would go down to the state beach and was inspired because Wilt Chamberlain was on the court next door playing volleyball. So I was around a lot of big-time athletics at a very young age, and we held the Olympics there in 84, 1984, and I was a flag bearer for the cross-country race, the final race. And so I really got a good exposure to a lot of different sports and activities in general. And Coach, I can't think of a better benefit that a parent can give to a child, and in some respects, a coach to another player. I encourage almost all my players to really get at least one or two other sports under their belt. I think that broader perspective was helpful. Was your experience the same?
Yes, I'm a firm believer in that. I think, you know, there's plenty of times, and I think the proof is starting to come up now. I was reading where Ohio State and the job that Coach Myers has done there, and I forgot what the exact number was, but people that just played football was not even in the teens. I mean, it was that low. Mm-hmm. All the scholarship people were to multi-sport players. So I think we get caught up too much on the profession we're in sometimes, and we have to be careful.
Yeah, you know, along with that, I think with tennis, because it's so one-side dominant, you're generally hitting a forehand and a serve with at least one hand. In order to really kind of get a balanced athlete, as well as, you know, physical experience, it is important to develop into, you know, some of my kids were quite good at martial arts and things like that, and I think that balance was you know, the toughness you want as well, and the tennis brings out such wonderful things that actually I don't think any other sport does. But one of the reasons that I wrote the handbook was some of the players, not necessarily ones that I would coach, but a few of them in the beginning, they would get to college, and I would hear from their college coaches that they were one-dimensional people, and they were very difficult to coach, and they couldn't teach them anything more. And, you know, Roy, could you become a better coach? I thought, well, you know, I'm giving everything I got, but maybe I'll try letting some other coaches carry the load a little bit, because those were my most difficult families, more or less. So I think that letting others shape these real prodigies, you know, that are exceptional tennis players, there is some benefit. And then more often than not, that tennis player who's the number one guy on the high school team is not necessarily the star on the other sports. And a little humility to help a tennis player along is never hurts.
That's for sure. I read in the book where you started coaching tennis at a young age. How did that happen, and how have you seen yourself change with your coaching experience, or haven't they?
Yeah, you know, it's a good question. The game has certainly changed. My coaching experiences, one short story that I don't share in the book, I share that I was coaching a high school team by my senior year in high school. I helped coach my younger sister's team. But do you remember the baseball player Davey Lopes, coach?
Oh, yes.
Right. You ended up coaching with Oakland and things like that. Well, in Los Angeles, he would live down the street from me. I was working in a baseball card store at the time, and I knew a lot about Davey Lopes, and I would watch him practice stealing bases on the street and things like that. And when I was 12 years old, his wife asked me for tennis lessons. Well, you don't want to disappoint your hero's wife, and so I wore a collared shirt. I had my tennis balls. I mean, I gave the most professional lesson a 12-year-old could give at that point. And I learned early on that, there's a great joy and opportunity in teaching and coaching tennis as well as playing it. So that was really after I got off on the right foot in that situation with Lynn Lopes. She, you know, bless her heart. She, who knows what instruction I gave her, but she asked for a second one. So I know that it couldn't have been that bad, but we all learned to coach at some point, and I just learned early on to, you know, keep that at a high level, the level of professionalism, the best that I could.
I think it's interesting that the people, Dave Lopes, would sit there and the wife would appreciate why you coach. And as you know, where we live in Florida, this used to be the home of the Dodgers in spring training. And when
my son
was with me in Vero Beach, we had the John Denny School of Tennis there. And when the players came in, because we coached many of their wives, and sometimes when they would get their husbands on the tennis court, being the great athletes they were, but they were frustrated because they just weren't as good at that as they were at baseball, and I think the wives realize that I want to get my child involved in everything, and I think that's important.
Yeah. Do you get Westways magazine there, the AAA magazine?
I think we do. I think we
there's
do, but
a,
I'm not.
We just got ours yesterday, and there's an interview, and they called Vin Scully the greatest Dodger of all time. It's one of the best interviews I've ever read, but you get the chance. I was going to mention that to you. You might take a look at it. I don't mind if we go between sports, a small digression, but it's one of the best interviews with a sports person I've ever read, and it happens to be in the Westways magazine. So that's our baseball tangent for the moment. But because I was into baseball cards, I was following Brooklyn. And how many years were the Dodgers there in Vero?
Oh, actually, just up until about 8 years ago when they moved to Arizona. But I mean, the Vero Beach is a big part of the population is a Northeast population because of that. Eastern Airlines used to fly in and out of Vero Beach, so it was a big and a special event. I was privileged to have one of my son's teammates go through the Dodger organization. He never made it. He went back to college and is a principal now. He's a very smart man. And his wife saying when I was down there, please make sure he had a good meal. And he got me invited into there, and it was their last meal before they broke up spring camp. And I told his mother, you know, you don't have to worry about the meat. And it was just, I couldn't believe the way they fed those players.
Well, I'll tell you, when I was back there for the coaches' conference in October, I drove from Orlando down to Vero. I just, you know, as an L.A. kid, I needed to see Vero. So I actually had a great meal in Vero myself. And I'll tell you, that was, it brought, you know, even though I couldn't quite, you know, watch the games or anything like that at that point, but I just brought back such memories and such a feel for so many of the stories that I had heard that taken place through that organization. So we've got a shared meal in Vero. That was a fun idea.
Yeah, good. Let me ask you a question. Let's get back to tennis for a minute. And you mentioned it briefly. What is the one thing that you think really stuck with you over the 30 years in coaching tennis that is important to you?
Well, you know, I think this sense of giving back. You know, when you get into the coaching profession, there needs to be a reason to get into it. And mine was clearly that I had received a lot from the game. Obviously, clearly I had received a lot from sports in general. And I'm very community and service-oriented. I have very broad interests. I always have been. But the ability to coach a team, and with the background that I had, I thought, you know, this is, it's, you know, it won't give me the Mother Teresa Award, but it will certainly help me in my own consciousness show gratitude for all that I had received from all the great coaches that I had gone through. So I think certainly, you know, this kind of sense of giving back was a reason that I stuck with it as long as I did. And once you start working with kids, it's very difficult to leave. I'm sure you found that as well.
Yes, it is, and it's and of course you're much younger than me, and I don't want to beat a dead horse, but one of our many conversations here in Florida, especially after reading your book, I mean, High School Tennis Coaches Handbook, I told everybody you have to read this because it's not just for coaches, it's for players and parents, but you know, and I know a little bit about, you know, your caring and your giving. And, you know, I still have a hard time rationalize, you know, I guess I just want to see you stay involved in tennis. And that's something I'm still struggling with.
Well, we all struggle with certain things. For me, you know, my coaching tennis was not my first goal as a profession. As a matter of fact, I think it's changed about 20 times of what my goals were. And as I got into it, it really became a love for me. I realized that it was much more than giving back. This was something I truly enjoyed. When I was in college, I kind of majored in minors as well as tennis. So my interests have always been very diverse, and I haven't just coached tennis. I ran a surfing and tennis camp when I was here in San Diego, and then I coached basketball, and through the years I've coached many different things. And it's really kind of been the metaphor for relationship, and as I've grown, you know, when you start something at age 4, by the time you hit roughly your mid-40s, where I'm at now, and you've coached and played that many seasons, you either become like Vin Scully, where it really does become, you know, the priority in your life, and many of these people get paid accordingly, or you transfer the tools to something better. And when I say better, I don't mean necessarily funner or something like that, but something that will support me a little bit stronger. And so for me, the coaching has been, you know, the best thing that I have ever done, and I've really looked for careers where I could kind of mirror that same relationship that I had that I found in tennis. And that's why I got my teaching credentials. I thought that would be a wonderful venue, and most of the coaches that I really respected, they were educators as well as coaches. Many of them, you know, they would, my high school coach, Coach Kling, he worked a full class load of coaching of history classes, and then he would, you know, right at the bell, zoom over to the park. He had to have us practicing, and then he would go for 3 hours of practice, and he had his own family and children and other careers as well. And when I saw that level of dedication, it just made me realize that I could do several professions at the same time as coaching. And then when the time came, and if it presented itself to move in a different direction after I felt like I had given back, then I may take it. And at this point, actually writing the book and staying involved in tennis was part of it. So I hope you realize that I am still committed to it, but just on a slightly different level at this moment.
I can relate to that because you know, leaving coaching high school tennis was hard for me, being asked to be a volunteer director of the tennis at high school helped me some make the adjustment, but I think it was more important, you know, my feeling of training high school coaches and the importance of education. So I think what I'm doing now, running the Florida High School Tennis Coaches Association, while it's not as much fun, hopefully it'll be more rewarding to other people later on.
Yeah, you know, I was a trainer for Peter Brewash International for several years, and I learned that the coaching of the players was fun, but coaching coaches is a whole nother level. It's a spectrum that I just barely, you know, kind of got around. So I have a respect for those that are able to coach coaches, and I think that what you've taken on there, you know, we don't have actually anything like that in California. I'm not sure how much I've explained to you about that, Coach, but it's something that California can certainly learn from Florida. And I mean, I was so impressed with the level of organizations, the opportunities to grow, all these things that your Florida coaches were given. That to be honest with you, I probably would never have written the book if it had been that organized and well done here in California. No slam on the great effort that many of the California coaches have given, but you know, our turnover is higher than yours, and the dedication and commitment and professional levelism is a bit lower than what I observed in Florida, just kind of off the cuff there.
Well, I hopefully that's going to change, and I'm an optimist, I know, but I think it is going to change. I know while in Texas in December, meeting with the executive director of that organization, which does a wonderful job in meeting A.G. LaGoria, who is starting to develop the California Tennis Coaches Association executive director. I think with the help of people like you, and I did give him your name as a contact and suggestion.
Good, I'm willing.
Good, because I do feel, I mean, I do, you know, I'm glad to be on their advisory board, but I think it's more important to have somebody like you from California be on there. And I mean, I contribute any way I can, and I stand ready, but, you know, we need some younger people like you in there. And I mean, get you involved right away by asking you, well, your experience, what would you recommend to a person getting into coaching? And not just, if you want to take up tennis, you can, but you know, I think your perspective and my perspective is pretty similar. It's, we're not just coaching one specific sport. We're coaching, development of lifetime skills. But I'm a young coach, and I'm thinking of getting into coaching right now. What do you tell me?
Well, it's each coach and each individual getting into it does it for a slightly reason, different reason. And I think giving blanket statements is something generally I shy away from. I love working with coaches one-on-one and kind of going with them from their unique perspective on how to make their coaching profession the best. And I do that on a regular basis. But the one thing that I would share is don't cut corners. We're outdoors. We're wearing shorts. It's a pretty cushy job, for, you know. And I think the tendency to kind of think, oh, you know what? I can show up 10 minutes late, and the kids aren't really going to notice. And you know, the spot on my shirt, who cares? And I don't even need to brush my hair. And 4-day growth, you know, these kinds of things. What you pointed out, that we're modeling much more than just tennis here. And I think that the people that have inspired me most within the tennis profession are the ones that didn't cut corners. They treated it as an actual profession. This was their job, whether they were volunteers or they were being paid. And some of them were getting, you know, when you get to college level, it gets pretty reasonable. But it's the same. Some of them are not as professional as others. And as I look at it, you know, I think that this commitment to better yourself, no matter what your position is the most important thing. There are some people that think that tennis coaching is a lowly job, and they treat it as such. And I never had that perspective, and I'm always grateful for that. But at the same time, I could kind of see how people could think that. You know, I mean, it's like I said, you're outdoors, you're in the sun. You know, when I grew up, most of the guys that I went to college with ended up in suit and ties. And it would have been very easy for me to kind of slide into something that was not my best effort. But I learned always give my best effort on the tennis court, and then likewise to treat it as a job. And I knew those kids were dependent on me. And this concept of role modeling and being a model is one that I say it in the book. And when you work with teens, your actions speak so much louder than your words. And to be on time and be groomed and give it your best is much better, generally speaking, than a coach that knows it all, that shows up late and, you know, just doesn't give what I would consider a professional effort. And I think that you guys avoid that in Florida a lot by the training programs that you offer, and you have role models that are visible and out in front, and people can see, you know, very quickly the difference between a proficient coach and one who's not. And in California, we don't really have that. You schedule your matches your first season, you show up, you meet the coaches, and you have this kind of intrigue on what is a tennis coach and what you're trying to figure out. And, you know, I'm still working on, you know, what the perfect tennis coach looks like. But at the same time, I have some element that they don't cut a lot of corners.
Very good, Roy. And speaking of profession, and I've done a lousy job here. I've just seen my screen go click, and I'm being an amateur at this. I've got to learn. But I see somebody on area code 619 that's been waiting for 15 minutes. So let me get them on here, or her on, whoever it is, and see if I can do this.
Yeah, a question or something like that. That's the local San Diego area. I've given a couple
of people. Oh, is that San Diego? Okay. Ken,
yeah.
619, are you on? 619, are you on?
Hello?
Oh, is that Mrs. Richardson?
Yes, I am listening. I didn't realize you could see my number. I'm enjoying listening to the conversation, so thank you.
Well, I apologize. You can tell I'm an amateur at this here. I'll get it right pretty soon. I know I lost somebody. But I appreciate you hanging on. Can you do you have a question for Roy?
No, I'm just enjoying the answers, the responses, because I know that coaching is such, these coaches play such a role model for young people, and it's nice to hear the perspective from the coach. So, again, thank you, and go ahead and continue with your questions.
Mrs. Richardson is on the tennis board in Coronado, coach, and she has several children that have played tennis and quite strongly. So she appreciates a good program, I'm sure.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. I don't know who, I lost somebody else here, and I apologize to them. I whoop, yeah, like I said, me and computers, I'm late getting into the 21st century. I'll have to start watching the screen. I was just enjoying our conversation so much, I forgot where I was. I apologize.
No problem, no problem. Well, we started off with to err as human, and to really feel foul things up takes a computer, and we can go back to that as many times as we. As I'm a graduate student at this moment, and I missed the first 4 days of classes, which were supposedly online, because I couldn't get my computer to function either. So don't you worry. I think we have an understanding crowd out there.
I pray that's the case. You know, you had mentioned before about basketball, and basketball was my first love. That's how I got involved in coaching. And I was thinking when you mentioned Will Chamberlain, and do you remember in October we had Brenda Schultz at the workshop?
I do, sure.
Yeah, well, for the people that don't know, Brenda Schultz, up until about a year ago, had the record for the fastest serve. I had record for the WTA, and I talked to her about, you know, her changing her game, which she says her husband had a lot to do with it, because she, as you know, she had the back injury. But when I asked her, you know, who was the most responsible, you know who she told me it was? Will Chamberlain.
She's from Holland. I couldn't tell. Let me think. Must have been an international athlete. Let me guess. She's tall. She's 6'3", I think. Might have been a, was
That's
it Will?
Right. That's
oh,
right.
Oh, wow.
Yep, and she said she was in D.C., and they were talking, and she and one of the reasons she switched coaches, we were talking to Will Chamberlain, and she was he was playing there, and Will Chamberlain said to her that, you know, he says, do you see me shooting from outside a lot? And she said, no, everything is underneath the dunk. And he says, because of my size. He says, and he said, he asked me, why do I want to play at the baseline when I'm 6'3" and I don't have the movement of these other players? And she says, and truthfully, it never dawned on me until he said it. And she went to her coach about it, and the coach says, oh, we're going to stay with our game. And she decided it was time to make a coaching change. So it's amazing the influences we have from other sports. And I just happened to think of that when you were, because you mentioned him sooner, earlier, Will Chamberlain. So it had to have been a great experience for you.
Well, you know, he was one of these guys, I think, wasn't he an All-American in another sport, maybe track and field at the same
track
time that he was playing basketball?
Yeah. Outstanding.
And then, I mean, to see him play volleyball, I think he was AAA level. I mean, the guy, I mean, he could move, you know, he had moved past his basketball career at this point. But, I mean, slam dunking and spiking, I mean, you know, and he could jump as well. I don't know how these guys would beat him, but somehow, you know, the two-man volleyball was, you know, he loved the workout, and you could just see it. But you know, when he when he went up to spike or block, you know, and of course I was, I did not hit my growth spurt until probably late in my, this would have been 10th grade or 11th grade. So I was about 12 or 13 at the time. So I was about 5'1" playing volleyball on the beach, you know, two courts away, and I would look over, and I mean, I was straight down on his spikes. You know, the defensemen would just look at each other and compliment the setter, you know, most of the time, you know, because, I mean, there was no defense against it. So it was very inspiring.
Yeah, I'm sure it might have been. Well, let's get back to tennis.
Sure.
I think that's the trouble with us being involved in so many things. We get distracted easy. Let me ask you another question. What would be some of the tools you would use? I think you know the discussions now about the youth today, and is it the same as it was yesterday? And I think, personally, I think, you know, I had to be motivated when I was a kid. One of the advantages of being old is we get selective memory and remember only the good things usually. But what are some of the things you would do to try to motivate players today? What are some of the tools you would use?
Well, I would borrow from the education field. And I have, and I think probably, you know, there has been a shift in how to treat youth. One of the ways these days is respect, and I think that that's a good basis for a relationship, even when you're in a position of authority. I think non-judgmental is a very, very big one. I share a story in my book about a guy named Buttons, and I mean, his skills were not in the same realm as everyone else's. And as it turned out, he was a better player because of that. And if I had taken, a strong course of action saying, if you don't do this, then, you know, this and that, and I just said, you know what, this guy has certain talents, and we'll see where it goes. And, you know, he ended up playing for Occidental on the college team. And I would not have guessed that, given the fact that he did not own a topspin shot his first 2 years of high school. I think humor is incredibly important to motivate people, and not sarcasm, never at somebody else's expenses, but I think humor that allows kids to be kids. I would study children's jokes books just so I could come up with jokes, and 1 year on the ladies' side, they appreciated it so much that at the end of the year, they all did some research, and they gave me a book. I still have it, and this was over a decade ago, and it's called Coach's Joke Book, and they researched tennis jokes that I didn't even know existed, but they felt so strongly about it that they wanted me to be able to use that for future years, and perhaps my material was getting a little thin, who's to say. We had a lot of seniors on that team, but I still, you know, felt that it was important to bring the jokes, and so they gave me material for the next few years that sustained me quite a bit. So I think that those things are important. And then another motivator for me was doing off-court activities. One school where I was at, we had a ropes course. And in that situation, in a team format, you often have somebody who's stronger than others and somebody who's weaker than others. But when you get off the tennis court, those balance out, and often the other people get to shine in a very strong way. And it allows that top, you know, 15-year-old kid who thinks he's the best tennis player in the world to realize that without that third doubles or that JV person who's clapping a lot, they would have never gotten over that 20-foot wall that was ahead of them. You know, these kinds of things where it just provides such different perspectives for the same group within the same organization that I found that to be very motivating as well.
Very good. I think they're all great observations. Jokes remind me, as you know, 6 weeks and six Saturdays in the spring and six Saturdays in the fall, my wife won't allow me to go any place because I have to be there for her 10 and under program. And usually I always end the sessions with jokes, and I ask the kids if they have fun. And one of the first sessions of this time, I ran late, and trying to cut things short, and this little girl says to me, aren't you going to ask us if we had fun today? And I said, well, yes, did you have fun today? And she says, no. And I said, well, you know what happens if you don't have fun? She says, we have to tell you a joke. And I said, well, that's right. So she reaches down her sock, and she pulls out an ice cream stick. And on the ice cream stick, there's a joke on there. She told me that.
That's where I got most of mine.
Is that where you got yours?
Absolutely.
She called me, so I just walked right into it. She was waiting for me. It was obvious. So I said, oh, boy.
Do you remember what the joke was?
No. Truthfully, she had them in both socks. She was waiting for me. She had... Go ahead.
I was going to say one of my favorite popsicle jokes. It just happened to come up this way. We were doing a summer camp, and we'd given out, and it came up, and it said, and I've modified this slightly. You'll see how. But what animal would you never want to play tennis against?
What animal would you want to play tennis against? A giraffe.
A cheetah.
Very good. Yeah, I like
you learn,
that.
You have a good time when you eat those popsicle sticks too, and you learn a lot. So it's
You know, it's funny. I think I might have told you in October, but I was told, I don't know, 30 years ago, 25 years ago or something, that, you know, you'll never make it in this profession. And I said, well, why not? And they said, well, you have too much fun in it. So I said, oh, well, you know, maybe I won't make it, but at least I'll have fun. So I think we forget about that sometime, that if it's not only trying to provide fun for them, but enjoy the experience. I think one of the things I enjoy about your book so much is that it's obvious that your experience was a continuous learning experience, and you weren't afraid to share that to the public. And, you know, and I think once we're afraid, or once we don't want to learn anymore, I don't know, that could be scary to me. I'm not fearful of being older. I want to get a lot older, but I just don't want to get old.
Well, I'll share a thought on fun that not everyone would agree with me on, but I'm going to take it anyway, and that is fun is a byproduct and not an end result. I think Coach Wooden's teams are the best example. You know, I share some of Coach Wooden's examples in my book and how they apply to tennis. And then when I was back and speaking at the convention, I showed his pyramid. And
right.
Personal best is at the top of the pyramid, but his foundation for learning and growing and really setting the foundation for a fun experience, his left cornerstone is hard work. His middle one is loyalty, cooperation, enthusiasm, and then his bottom one is friendship. And I think that sometimes the joy on the team, and I think it was probably about a 20-year college playing team reunion. You know, we have these for the university, and the guy next to me was a year ahead of me, and he said, "Could you believe that one coach we had? I puked 5 times after he had a sprint, you know, on 5 different occasions, you know, really." And this guy was a little out of shape, and I was in shape at the time. I think, "Alan, what are you talking about? That was the best experience for me. I was loving it," and I didn't heave, but I was having a difficult time as well. And our coach happened to be an Ironman triathlete, and what we were doing was tiddlywinks compared to what he could do. So he was asking what he thought was a little bit. For us, it was this huge thing. But the bonding, I mean, here we are, you know, over 20 years later, and this guy remembers being next to me, you know, as we're going through this grueling thing, and although it didn't appear at fun, you know, in front of the rest of the young guys, and he and I were two of the older guys there, he was having a little fun on this reminiscence that, hey, you know what, we were working harder than you guys were. And so I think this definition of fun is not necessarily, you know, giggling, you know, for an hour and a half straight during the middle of practice. It could be that. I'm not saying that it's not. But the foundation of what needs to be accomplished in this situation with a goal as a team is equally as important. And so for the young coaches out there in the teaching profession, when you start off in August or September, for young teachers, there's a myth. It's not true. There are other ways to coach, but they'll say, "Don't smile until December." Have you heard that one before? Yeah, they'll tell young teachers, you know, you get a bit, "Don't smile until December. Don't let them know that you like them." And I think at the coaching level, there's some truth to that. You know, is especially as a young coach, I started off coaching a high school team. I think I was early 20s, very early 20s, and the kids weren't much different in age than I was, but I worked them so hard, and they knew that I loved them. But at the same time, you know, we didn't have time for, you know, talking about, you know, the things that there was a level of professionalism between them and I. And to be honest with you, I don't always see that with the young coaches these days. I still am at the San Diego Championships, the team and individuals, and I go see that. And the young coaches, I'm not going to call it a mistake, I'll just call it a style of coaching, where they really try to take on a brotherly atmosphere with these people as opposed to this level of, hey, you know what, I am the coach. And sometimes it helps them, and sometimes it hurts them, whereas the more experienced coach knows better than to try to, you know, kind of, be in high school, you know, relive their high school experience through their kids, through their players. They know there's a distinction, and their level of professionalism lends to a different level of humor. And again, humor, I'm okay with it, but if Coach Wooden felt that the platform needed to be pretty solid, I want to make sure we don't veer too far off that.
Well, I couldn't agree more. And I think, you know, if some of these young coaches would just hang in there a little longer and you know, and, you know, don't worry about the mistakes that they made, because God knows if you're in this profession, you're going to be making mistakes. There's no two ways about it. But eventually, what you believe in will show. I remember a few years ago, well, maybe it's 7, 8 years ago, time goes by, when the USTA came out with their no-cut program. And I know you had a no-cut, like I had a no-cut.
Sure,
but nobody,
sure.
You know, we just didn't cut people. They didn't know. We didn't say no-cut. And when the USTA came out with the no-cut program, I remember that first year, and they put this thing up in the school. And at the September meeting, because we started in January, at that September meeting, it was the biggest parent-player meeting I had, and everybody was there, and it was because there was a no-cut program. Well, the second meeting in October, there were less people, and the third meeting in November, there was much less, because the players are talking and they're telling them, no-cut doesn't mean no work. You're going to work with Coach Denise. Trust me, you're going to work, and you're not going to horse around on the tennis court because he ain't going to put up with it. So I think there is an entitlement, and I think a younger coach, you know, would have probably found it more difficult than I did, because I just was doing it so long. And I encourage these young coaches, try to hang in there. You know, what helped me was I had people that sit there and corrected my mistakes and let me grow.
Well, no cuts doesn't mean that you don't accept players' resignations when they can't stay on the team any longer.
And I had plenty of them. I was actually accused one time of not running a no-cut program because he has so many rules, and, you know, so, but did he cut you or did you cut yourself? You know, the people cut themselves. Well, listen, we only have about 3 minutes left. I can't believe this had gone by so fast. But I'd appreciate it if you would just share with the audience how they can get your book, because I really do believe that this is a book that parents should read, players should read, and especially young coaches, and not just young coaches. I mean, you don't get much older than me. I just enjoyed the book immensely. How do people get the book?
Sure. Well, I appreciate the opportunity to kind of sell the book. It actually wasn't written from a profit motive to write the book. It really was written to uplift the conversation and help those that are working through it out. I have a website. It's www.letinthelightpublishing.com. Again, that's www, and then it's four words, let in the light, the word publishing.com. That's the only one that has the hardback and paperback edition of the new one for players, parents, and coaches. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Nook, Kindle, they all have the earlier version, and I keep it on there. You know, Amazon's great and all these kinds of things, but for this new edition, it felt wise to start with my own. I have my own publishing company. I've got, you know, many projects that I'm working on these days. It's kind of morphed into other things. And they can call me, 619-717-3460. A lot of people prefer to do that directly. But the website is the classic way to do it, and you get a little discount as well as a slightly newer book on the letinthelightpublishing.com website.
Well, Roy, I really appreciate you being on the show. It's great talking with you. I always enjoy our conversations. You know, if you get back out here in Florida again, I'd be disappointed if you didn't stop in and see us. I know my wife Bobby would be excited to see you again too. And maybe we'll fit you into another, given you're out here, we can get you into another workshop, because you have so much off. And I appreciate you being on the show. So thank you. And
yeah, well, The workshop would be great, but Bobby's cinnamon rolls are enough that I would get the next flight out if they were warm out of the oven. Trust me, those were world class. So I appreciate everything that you guys have done for me as well.
Well, we enjoy having you, and thank you very much. And again, thank you for being on the show. I hope that California gets off the ground. I think A.G. LaGuardia is going to get that off the ground pretty soon. And hopefully, if he hasn't contacted you yet, hopefully he's going to contact you any day, because stay in.
Good. Well, I look forward to it, Coach. Thank you. Thanks for having me on the program.
Okay. I'll talk to you later. Well, that's
Sounds
it
great.
For today. I enjoyed talking with you once again. Hopefully, we will. I will have you next week. We will be talking to Tarek Merchant, and there's a lot of information about scholarships. There's a lot of information that's not true, and hopefully, we can clarify some of that. The following week, Coach Charles White from Marion Military Institute will be here. And everybody doesn't belong into Division I college, and everybody grows at a different time. And sometimes that two-year college is an important part of growing an individual needs. So thanks for listening. I look forward to talking with you next week, and you have a blessed week.